Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. John Ledyard and Trevor Sikkema on a Monday morning, Labor Day morning. But there is no rest for the wicked, Trevor. And we are the wicked, and we have a ton to talk about on this Monday morning because we're coming off the first college football Saturday since last season, man. And it feels great. And I don't know that we could have a slit. Like, I was texting you last night. I was like, we could talk about a gazillion different things today because we didn't talk about like NFL cutdowns yet, which we'll have to get to at some point this week. College football in general was crazy, and it's been spread out over multiple days now. So we've got, I feel like, a ton to talk about and catch up on since the weekend. But I don't think we can do anything without talking about quarterback performances from this past weekend because they were so polarizing and all over the map, and there was so much going on in such a heralded quarterback class. It seems like there's a lot to discuss after one weekend of football.
Yeah, no, that's definitely where we got to start. You want to start about the first two guys who played, Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold, and then we'll just keep going from there, man. Josh Allen now, you know, a week ago, the article came out that he was the best quarterback since Cam Newton. I quote tweeted it and said, must be two Cam Newtons then. even with Rosen being, and you and I discussed this in our quarterback rankings, Allen. Even with Allen being my QB1 when we talked about it, like,
yeah,
there was still so much like he had to improve on. And the reason why you kind of make a guy like that your QB1, or in my mind, is because he showed a lot. Like, tools, and we talk about this all the time, like, tools, this kid's got him. Like, he can be mobile. He can throw on the run. He can do cross-body stuff. He can flick it and get it 25, 30 yards downfield with velocity and speed. Yeah, he can do all that. But at the end of the day, man, his stats versus Power 5 opponents now are bad. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just...
Terrible. He has like 9 picks and 1 touchdown. Picks. And then I think he threw 2 against BYU touchdown. Too.
That hurts a lot. That hurts his resume a lot. And then Sam Darnold, same thing. I'll just touch on him and then I'll let you respond there. But, you know, going into the year, a lot of people thought that Sam Darnold was their QB1. And a good amount of people. And two, again, this is a guy who, and we saw it yesterday or Saturday with him where, you know, he gets into a little bit of trouble, throws the ball, and then just effortlessly kind of, you know, like 30 yards to the sideline. And you see why people like Sam Darnold. But at the same time, man, I mean, he's got what? How many starts to his name from last year?
I think 9.
And we all super fell in love with him because of the bowl game that he played. And he played really well, but you just still, the bowl game, the Rose Bowl game that he played last year that we all love from him was so, and I'll just say it, like, college football-y. And we're going to get that to when we talk about Rosen, to where this quarterback will throw a ball, say, 40, 50 yards down the field into, like, double coverage. Somehow the wide receiver will get it, even though it was not a great decision, and will go, yeah, what a throw! You know, and yeah. It's like, yeah, you know, so.
Trace McSorley, the Trace McSorley experience.
Oh, my God, yeah. So, just like those two guys, and we'll build off of that. Like, geez, a polarizing Saturday for both of those dudes who many considered to be, like, the top kind of quarterbacks in the league. So,
and I watched the Wyoming-Iowa game because I was scouting and covering it for NDTScouting.com. So, if you're interested in my game notes from that, they're over at NDTScouting.com. You can check those out from the Wyoming-Iowa game. And to me, Josh Allen just looked totally overwhelmed. Like, the speed of the game was too much for him. And, I mean, think about how many better defenses and faster defenses he'll face around college football, just in college football.
Not even the NFL.
I mean, Iowa's a good defense, don't get me wrong. But in terms of team speed and talent, that's far from the best group that he could see if he played in another conference. The tools are undeniable. And I get tired of saying it because everybody's like, you know, I'll be like, oh, Josh Allen's starting over. He's like, yeah, but his physical tools are undeniable. Sure, they are. But, like, it means nothing if you can't play the quarterback position a whole heck of a lot better than he's playing it. I think that's one of the biggest struggles with Josh Allen. It's that accuracy-wise, he leaves a lot to be desired, consistently abandons clean pockets and makes off-platform throws that he doesn't need to make. And yeah, he has the arm to be able to do that, but it's not conducive to consistent success in the NFL. Throws into coverage consistently. The picks are an indicator of that. He had another pick dropped on one of the first drives for Wyoming. He throws late a lot of the time. He isn't necessarily quick to process all the time in the pocket. So there's just so much that still needs work. And this was the big season. Yeah, the tools are great, but going into every season, you have the hope that he's going to arrive as a player and be completely dominant as a prospect. And it didn't happen. It didn't happen the other day against one of the best competitions he'll face this season. And it's fair to wonder if it's going to happen this season now at this point, because there's a lot of season left to go. But again, like I said, this is one of the top opponents he's going to face this year, if not the top one. And then he didn't show any growth from the player he was in the past that we had so many concerns about. In fact, it looked like almost a worse version of that. So to me, I wonder if is he not able to adapt his style of play and transform who he is as a player and grow in that way, or is he just not coachable? And not, I don't mean like in an attitude way. I just mean in terms of taking what he does and changing his decisions and some of the ways that he plays so that he can be more consistently productive. I don't know which it is
Blake
with him,
Bortles,
but it's clearly
right?
an issue.
I mean, that's the Blake Bortles thing. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just – we're realizing now he's just not coachable. Like, he can't get it down. He can't change. Yep. And that's the thing with Josh Allen, too. Even – like, going into the season, the reason why you hold him to such a high regard is because you see those potential things. And going into a final year, you go, okay, well, you know, if he puts it all together, this and that, he has probably the highest potential in the class. But, boy, yeah, we saw yesterday. And, again, we're going to get into DeAndre Francois, I'm sure. You know, mm-hmm. we're going to talk about that a little bit. But when you have 8 months to prepare for an opponent and you look rattled like that, I don't really know what to think of you. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to too much overreact from one game. But if you have that much time to prepare for one opponent, I have my worries. That's awesome.
They play Oregon, whatever, you know, if you consider that a better, I mean, I wouldn't, but they play Oregon on September 16th, and then the rest of the game, it's all conference games, and, you know, I mean, he'll face some good tests there for sure. But here's the biggest thing with Allen to me. And people say, oh, he's got a terrible supporting cast against a Power 5 opponent. You know, blah, blah, blah. He's still not, you know, he's not going to look good. The tape is the same against his conference opponents. It's his style of play that's the issue, not his caliber of teammate. You know, you saw Rosen last night, and Rosen was far from perfect. I've written about that. We'll continue to talk about that here on the podcast. He was far from perfect, but you saw him hang in and try and make plays in the pocket, try and make plays within structure. You saw countless times where guys weren't getting separation, and he had nowhere to really throw the football accurately. Now, he could have played with a little better anticipation if his arm was, you know, elite caliber arm. Maybe he threads some of those really tight windows down the field vertically. You know, there's some issues there. I think he can pull the trigger a little bit quicker, but I think he's got some qualms there. But anyway, the point being that I think that Allen is not trying to play within structure, and he's not trying to do the. It's not his teammates that are letting him down. He's the one abandoning clean pockets. He's the one making off-platform wild throws and bad decisions into coverage. It's not so much that guys aren't open. You know, the drop pick early on in the game for Wyoming, where the Iowa safety Jake Gervais came over and dropped the pick. The receiver was open. He just waited too long to throw the ball. And when he's out there running around, playing his style where he feels comfortable in the midst of chaos, and it just doesn't work against more quality opponents. So to me, I just thought it was on Allen more than anything else. And yes, like, his caliber teammate isn't great. There's no question. Last year it was very good. And, you know, and even when he played in, if you take out the Nebraska game from last year, all the other games, he averaged 56. His completion percentage was around 56%, and he threw 10 picks still. Five came in the game against Nebraska, but then over the rest of the season, he still threw 10 picks. Like, this was still one of the more turnover-prone guys. And there were several more in there when you watched the tape. You were like, oh, that should have been picked. Against a better opponent or in the NFL, that's picked for sure. And so, to me, I just don't know. The top five pick is just utterly insane to me.
Like, yeah, now that's looking bleak.
I don't understand. Yeah, with a great tool set, like, I don't know. The media's done this, though. They've hyped up a guy to be a top five pick when the NFL really doesn't think of him. Right.
This is the age. That's why you listen to our podcast and nobody else's. Because
yes.
we'll tell you how it is. And just as we get to that, let's talk about how I had Allen as QB1, and now I'm saying DeAndre Francois was better than him.
Let's talk about it. You love Francois' performance, the way he started out, at least the other night, huh? And then obviously the devastating injury. And
yeah, you know, no. So look. I'll just say this, man. I've been doing this for, I think this is really my fourth year seriously doing scouting, mm-hmm. For the fifth year, something like that. And the more seriously you do this, the more you get to form your own opinions instead of just, you know, reading a draft magazine or reading some big rankings and kind of switching things up a little bit here and there yourself. The more you do it, the more you get to stick to your guns. And that means the more you'll find guys that are your, like, hashtag hive that will say. And then it'll also have you miss on some guys, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So one of the products of that was when I watched DeAndre Francois last year, and people are freaking out at me because I'll just set it up by saying this. If you missed it on Twitter, when the Florida State game was going on, I was watching DeAndre Francois be the same calm, cool, collected, clutch quarterback that he was all of last year, while FSU's offensive line was basically just traffic cones for him against one of those ferocious D-lines in football. And he was delivering all these passes and all these dimes to Auden Tate and these other receivers. And I said, that guy is better than Sam Darnold and Josh Allen. Give me DeAndre Francois. And people freaked out about me because they're like, oh, it's one game, all of this, you're just overreacting. And let me say this. It's not one game, because I watched DeAndre Francois do this every single Saturday last year as a redshirt freshman. And he was doing this in the first half against Alabama in the first game of the year, dropping dimes, not afraid of a damn thing, as this defensive line was putting pressure and pressure and pressure on him. And for, like, I'm a sucker for mentality, man. And I don't think Francois has the best arm, but I think that his arm is totally fine. And I just love what he is above the shoulders, toughness, how he breaks things down, how he is in the clutch. And so I just made that statement. And holy cow, man, that injury that he had just broke my freaking heart.
Yeah, that's crushing.
And now we hear that it is, in fact, I mean, basically worst case scenario for him is that he did in fact tear his patellar tendon. And the patellar tendon, I'm not a doctor, but I was talking to a friend of mine who has torn his patellar tendon before, and he was telling me that the thing about it is that it, unlike an ACL or a PCL or something like that, and somebody can fully correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe because of where it is located on the knee, it's in the front part of the knee, it is something that you can repair, but it is never something that you can fully strengthen again. And so Francois, you know, unfortunately, I guess for him, you know, he was not a dual threat quarterback. He is a pocket quarterback, so it's not like a lot of his game relied on mobility. But, I mean, that knee is never going to be the same, ever, ever. And he's done for the full year for sure. He's going to get a medical red shirt, and he'll come back next year. I'm sure he's not going to declare for the draft. But it just sucks, man. It really sucks because this is one of my favorite kids to watch in all college football, and now he suffers an injury that will truly perhaps, you know, shake that mental fortitude of him that made him so good and made him such a heralded prospect in my mind. So
yeah, I don't think it will, but at the same time, I agree. Like, it is, I mean, it's crushing to see him go down because he is a gutsy player. He's college football. You know, he's a fun aspect of what we enjoy watching on Saturdays. And so from that perspective, it's hard. But also for him as a kid, I mean, this is an opportunity he had to, you know, they had an opportunity to make, even if they lose that game, you know, which they did, they have an opportunity to make it run to the national championship, and perhaps meet Alabama again. And, you know, at that point, it looks pretty good for you to come out as a draft prospect. You know, I mean, to me, Florida State's team really asserted themselves really well the other night. It was a combination of a couple turnovers by Francois and a couple disasters by special teams that turned the game. Other than that, I think Florida State's you know, they could, I think they could run the table, to be honest. But I mean, they could have with Francois now.
Now right, not knows? Anymore.
Yeah, not anymore, I'm sure. So, yeah, crushing for them, crushing for him, crushing for, you know, even us as NFL draft evaluators, because we would have loved to talk about Francois this year. But now it appears that, you know, more than likely he'll be back for his redshirt junior season. I think he's a day three pick if he would come out now anyway, to be honest. But I love the gutsiness. I love his ability to hang in there. I love how tough he is. I love his playing style. I love him as a college football player.
He's a guy to me, and like when you say a day three pick, he's a guy to me who I don't know. Even if I would hold him in high regard, I don't think the NFL would as much. And so, like, I don't think this is a guy who's going to go first round. But I'll say that even if he goes, like, late day two, I feel like this is a guy who, wherever he goes, that's not round one, because I don't think he would go round one, he will outplay where he gets drafted.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair. Yeah, I think
that's what I think
that's fair to say, yeah. What about Sam Darnold? Did you watch that game? I got to see only a little bit of that game. I've seen very little of his performance, so I don't want to comment completely secondhand, but
no, I didn't get to see a ton of it. They were just playing an opponent where I thought that he was going to light it up.
Same.
He really didn't. What I read. So right. You're right. I don't want to. I'm sure we'll get to watch some of Sam Darnold plenty ourselves. So I guess we can wait to fully comment on that. But I know he threw two picks too and didn't throw a touchdown, right?
Yeah, he threw two picks. I don't know if he threw a touchdown or not, but I thought that he threw behind his receiver to the middle of the field on the first interception, and it was deflected up in the air and picked off, deflected up in the air by a defender who could have probably picked it off initially and then picked off. Bad throws for sure. He had another almost pick, I believe, where the defender came down out of bounds, I think. Just some issues that, to me, I think he'll iron out. Now, I expect Darnold to come back and play much better, because there were times in the game where he made really good throws as well. Just from kind of rewatching and watching some of the highlights, I was like, oh, that's a really good throw. And so he did some good things. I think he will bounce back. But this kind of goes back to what I said before to you, Trevor, when we were talking on the show. I said this quarterback class is not the certainty people are making it out to be. And I think that we really, and not to toot my own horn, but I think we really saw that over the first weekend. Like, we saw Rosen come out incredibly rusty, and even down the stretch in that game, and let's just honestly transition in that game to some degree. Incredible comeback, obviously. The mental fortitude you want to see.
He should have thrown, like, six picks.
Yeah, like, let's be honest.
I hate saying that in the moment, because college football is the most fun thing exactly. I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
But, like, 12 hours later, we're sitting here on a podcast recapping a performance draft-wise. He should have thrown, like, six picks.
100%. Yeah. I mean, it was not a good performance, for sure, by Rosen. Now, I hesitated to say his stock was down, because when you have a comeback like that and show your mental fortitude, and you were rusty coming in because he hadn't played a game since, like, almost a full year. He hadn't played in the game because of the injuries and coming off surgery and all that stuff. When you add all that up and you add up how the way he played down the stretch, which he did some really nice things. I mean, dominating the middle of the field, well-placed balls, accuracy, led his receivers into yards after catch, made quicker decisions as the game went on. Man, he was so slow at making decisions. I know that he was under pressure the first two drives at certain points, but then they fixed the protection for a lot of that first half. And he was just so slow at making decisions and getting the ball out of his hand. And I know people weren't coming uncovered easily, but I still think he's got to move a little bit quicker through progressions. All that's part of being rusty, so I'm really excited to see what he looks like moving forward. But I thought he was really tested, and even down the stretch, he made some really nice throws in the middle of the field. But, I mean, the one touchdown went right through the defender's hand, should have been intercepted, and that's probably the end of it in terms of comeback hopes at that point. The one touchdown, he even says, and this is what I do, I really like this about Rosen. He is absolutely, he is my type of guy, because he completely understands it can't be about the narrative at all. Like, it has to be about reality. Like, that, and that's basically what this game was. And he even said after the game, we were an inch away from losing that game probably 10 times, from throwing a pick, almost throwing a pick to a D lineman on that final drive, I believe. He threw it right to a guy at the line of scrimmage. Two tip balls. I was fully trying to throw that ball away, that touchdown to Theo. I was not trying to throw it to anyone. He just hit my hand and I got lucky. You know, the pass that floated near the goal line. I mean, it was a pick six waiting to happen, and no defensive back adjusted to the ball nor attacked the ball. That just kind of stood and watched. It was one of those kind of everything slows down and moves in slow motion type moments, and UCLA receiver made a great play on it. But Rosen's completely honest about the fact that even though it was an amazing comeback, he didn't play well. Like, the game should have been over several times. He should have thrown it away several times, you know. And he stuck with it. I thought the fake spike throw was a really good one. Although now, like, I thought last night seeing the replay, I was like, that ball's still moving around. I'm not sure why they didn't review it. And then today, as we see more close-up replays and everything away from the emotion of the moment, clearly should have been reviewed and maybe wasn't a touchdown, but it wasn't Rosen's fault. He made a really nice throw and a really gutsy decision there. I think teams are going to love the stones that he has. I think they're going to love the fortitude and the mental toughness that he has. I wonder if his arm is elite. I wonder how he – I thought in the vertical portions of the field, he only threw a couple deep balls, and they were almost all underthrown. Does he – I wonder if he has the arm strength to get the ball deep. I don't consistently see it. And maybe it's still recovering from the shoulder, but those are things that I worry about when I look at Rosen and some of the decisions and the processing speed in the pocket – still need to pick up. I still have tons of questions. Great comeback. Great moment for college football. As a draft prospect evaluator and as a scout, tons of questions still for me with Josh Rosen.
Yeah, I think that his stock was definitely up from last night, and here is why. Because I think half the teams in the NFL are going to look at it, you know, maybe big picture, be able to step back and be like, all right, well, hold on. He had a couple of bad throws and blah, blah, blah. And then you're going to get a handful of NFL teams and scouts who go, you can't teach a comeback that mental aspect of it and never thinking you're out of it and always letting the next throw be the one to win you the game and all that kinds of jazz. And the reason why I say that his stock up from only a handful of teams may be thinking that is because it only takes one. You know, we talk about when we analyze prospects, their stock to us often has to do with an appeal to 32 different teams, right? So we take all things into account, you know, systems that they can fit into, how versatile they can be, their production, all this kinds of stuff. But we do it as scouts, you know, hashtag internet scouts. We got to do it for all 32 teams. But in reality, you take a game like last night, and I'd say Rosenstock is up because I guarantee you there's at least four or five teams who have head scouts who absolutely love what Rosen did last night and don't really care about the other stuff. They'll worry about it later. And
because everybody's going to think they can fix it.
Right, right. Those people are going to think they can fix it. And the things that he showed last night with the mental fortitude, they're going to think that they can't teach and that that's something that they need. And so that's why I will say that his stock is up, because you only need one of those teams to pull the trigger in the top five for you to go top five, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's all you need. And so that's why I think NFL standpoint, stock's up. For us, a little less encouraging because of all the things that could have gone wrong in that game. Because, like, what if, I mean, if one of those things goes wrong and UCLA does not win that game, then the narrative's different.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little bit different. And they overcame a 34-point deficit. Holy smokes. Also, like, is someone done at A&M or what?
I don't know, man. They got a little string of bad luck there with that quarterback having to come in the game because he was completely, because the other guy got hurt, he was completely unprepared. And I think he's a true freshman.
Yeah.
How much that's on the stat? I mean, he was 3 of 17 passing, I think. I mean, that's
not great.
Pitiful.
Not great.
I mean, you have to, but I thought they were asking him to execute a lot of short throws. But really, main thing, just stick with the run.
Coach defense. Yeah. Enough.
And just stick with the run. They got away from the run too much. I thought they tried to get cued a couple times. You know, pointless.
Kyle Shanahan.
They Kyle Shanahan. Yep. So this weekend was so bad for college football quarterbacks at one point that Lamar Jackson shredding Purdue, as many as times as Lamar Jackson shredded someone in college football, him shredding freaking Purdue was stealing the headlines going into Sunday. And I think Lamar Jackson did some really good things, but man, you would have thought Purdue was Bama the way people were talking about it. But we needed somebody to get excited about, right? Because, you know, everybody had been disappointing. And, Lamar Jackson was Lamar Jackson. You know, he looked still accuracy issues, still a couple times where he ran around in a clean pocket, ran into his lineman and worked himself out of a jam and made an amazing play. I don't know whether that stuff translates yet or not, but I thought – and this is Jackson and Rosen, I thought, were similar in this way, that Jackson, between the hashes, between the numbers almost, as a quarterback, that is where he does his best work, in the short, in the intermediate range of the field almost. He throws the ball with such nice zip when he's able to just face forward and thread those passes over the middle. I love his release and everything like that. I thought that he looked really clean from that perspective. Still have issues deep, I think, you know, that we can get to at some point, but Purdue was obviously completely no match for him. You know, it still ended up being a tighter game than it probably should have been, because Louisville's defense is Louisville's defense. But I think Lamar Jackson has a pretty good stable of players around him too, but he elevates those guys consistently with his performance, and it was a fun performance. He was really, really good. I don't know how much better as a prospect I feel about him after one game. I got to go back, rewatch, because I saw some of it, but you're flipping back and forth everywhere. I thought he was better than Darnold and Allen played, for what it's worth, for 1 week. I'm not making any decisions long-term based on that, but I thought there was no question about that the other day. So lots to watch with him, but despite the weaknesses and the things he did wrong the other day, I mean, there was a couple interceptable passes I thought that weren't, and like I said, the pocket movement and decision making there is still a big question mark for me. But overall, I mean, there's no way you can say this wasn't a positive performance for Jackson.
I thought it was great, and I only got to see little bits and pieces of it. But certainly, like you said at the beginning there, we need somebody to get excited about in this quarterback class. Lamar fit the bill. I saw the couple of, you know, people posted some of the dime throws that he had down the field that were very nice. That's not anything surprising. I mean, Lamar Jackson can have a couple of those every single game. He definitely has the potential to, and I don't think anybody realistically disagrees with that. It's certainly just the consistency part. You know, we want to see him when he takes the deep shots, be able to put it where it needs to be. And even when he takes the smaller shots, just be able to put the ball where it needs to be. Because right. We all know his athletic ability. And you're right, we all know how his dynamic talent and skill set has the ability to elevate the people around him. And that is a trait about a quarterback as well, which is great. So I thought Jackson had a good weekend. His frame. I don't know, man. I just watch him and I'm like, I'm just so scared of it.
I know.
I try to picture this guy in an NFL uniform, and you know, just for an example, we're going through NFL cuts that happened this weekend, and
right.
I'm sitting back and I'm thinking about all these players in college that I saw put on these highlight reel things.
Yeah,
that just can't find space in the NFL.
Right.
And Jackson is a special athlete and he's a special ball carrier, and I know that, but he obviously will not have the same kind of space that he will in the NFL. So at that point, you're taking a lot more hits. The game speeds up a lot more. I'm just worried about him. I'm not totally knocking him as a prospect.
Sure.
I still think he does a lot of good things well, but I'm I think this might just be something I have the whole year. I don't know. Maybe I'll get over it. I don't know. But right now, I love what I see from him as a college football player. It's great. I hope he elevates the consistency a little bit, but I don't know if I'm ever going to get over my fear of that until I see him in the NFL and maybe prove me wrong that maybe I should have had him a little higher here and there.
Here's the thing about Jackson that makes it so interesting, his evaluation, is that the people who are in his corner always go back to the, oh, tell me again that he's not a quarterback. Well, we're past that. Like, I know some schmuck in big media probably said that to get clicks, but can we let that go and move on? He's obviously a quarterback. We're evaluating him as a quarterback. Like, not to say he isn't a great athlete, but he's a quarterback. Like, that's – everybody's going to talk about him as a quarterback for the next year. Like, I just don't know why we need to go back to that every single time, because one time some schmuck for ESPN or something said – oh, maybe he'll be a great athlete in the NFL and hope they can find a position for him. Like, okay, if that's fine. Like, someone dumb is always going to say something dumb. I mean, we have Jason Whitlock, we have Skip Bayless, we have 100 guys out there paid to do that. Like, can we stop giving them, you know, credence, and let's talk about him as a quarterback. Let's talk about the strengths and weaknesses, because there's a big difference between, okay, your position is Trevon Boykin, for example. Remember him? A lot of people wanted to change his position. Trevon Boykin was definitely a quarterback. He just wasn't a very good one. And so the question with Jackson is, how good a quarterback can he be in the NFL? Not whether he's a quarterback or not. So I hate going back to that. And in some ways, I blame the idiots who said it in the first place. And in other ways, I blame the fact that we continue to bring it up for no reason at all. Like, no one's talking about that right now. No one that matters anyway. You know, let's talk about who he is as a quarterback and whether what he does works. And the reality is that a lot of the concerns around Jackson are legit concerns, and we should have him, and we should ask him about a prospect. And we should also keep a very open mind to see whether those end up being a problem throughout the rest of the season, or they don't. And so that's kind of where we're at with Jackson. And I thought there were still some of those issues the other day, but it was still a solid performance for him. And I don't think you could view that in any way as saying he hurt his stock the other day. But if he torched Purdue, can Baker Mayfield get some credit for going 19-20 for 329 and three tutties against UTEP?
I'm very excited for Baker Mayfield against OSU this week coming up.
Yeah.
Very excited.
Me too.
The last game Oklahoma lost was last year against Ohio State. Yeah.
And Mayfield played that game well to start, and then things unraveled down the stretch. He was very good to start that game. Oklahoma was good to start that game.
Baker Mayfield-esque.
What's that?
Which can be Baker Mayfield-esque,
right,
you know?
Right, right. Although it's weird because, I don't know. I've talked about his accuracy.
So much of Baker Mayfield's success has to do with tempo because it's just how Oklahoma is. And, you know, they go a million miles an hour because it's Big 12, and Big 12 offenses, this is just what they do. They play with tempo. That's how they win. But, like, if you don't hit your first or second down, like slant pass or whatever it is that you have called up and you're still calling the no huddle, all of a sudden you're in third down, and then if you incomplete one more pass, you're off the field like within 12 seconds.
Yeah.
And then you have to wait another 5, 6, 7 minutes until you get back off the field. And if you do that again, that means that you've been on the field for a total of 45 seconds in the last 12 minutes of gameplay because the other team's actually running like an offense. And so that's the thing about Baker Mayfield with me is that I just wonder how much of his success has to deal with the tempo that they have, because in the NFL you can't have the tempo that fast. You just can't. And so that's just what I think when I watch him. He is such a, like, if he is on a roll, Baker Mayfield's incredible. He is so much fun to watch. But I just wonder, I've seen the times where the tempo of Oklahoma's offense gets knocked off, or he'll incomplete one or two passes, or a run won't go as far as it needs to go to keep the drive going, and all of a sudden, you know, it's like Baker Mayfield's been on the field for less than a minute in an entire quarter, and you go, okay, well, that, I don't know what just happened here. So that's the thing with me is that can Baker Mayfield be consistent enough, not even in his play, just from drive to drive? Like, can he not have the super hot and cold streaks that his narrative comes with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we saw that with him, and then there were questions. You talk about the scheme or system questions with Mayfield. Luke Falk, 33-39 for 311 and three touchdowns, but I think like almost all of his completions were like in the short to intermediate area, and the vast majority in the short area. So he continues to take advantage of the offensive system. I think he's incredibly accurate, throws with great timing. His mechanics are very good. He manages the pocket well. I don't think he has a great arm. I don't think it's a bad arm either. I think he throws with good zip, but you know, down the field, he's going to have to prove that he can be a guy that attacks and is more aggressive in those types of situations, because you are going to be in those situations in the NFL. And if you want to prove you're an NFL starting quarterback, that's going to have to be something that happens. And we'll see whether Washington State system, you know, that whether they open things up and allow him to do that in terms of being more aggressive down the field. I think that's going to be one of the big things to watch with him moving forward this season, because I mean, I think there's some definite talent there. I know everyone's going to dismiss it because he's the opposite of what Twitter, what social media likes in a quarterback, because he's not asked to be super aggressive down the field. So Twitter's all about air yards and average yards per attempt, and it doesn't matter what the scheme's asking you to do and what the offense is asking you to do. Just chuck it down the field, man. If you just threw it further every play, we would just like you more as a prospect. Ridiculous way to analyze these guys in a lot of ways, but that's what a lot of these guys will go through as quarterbacks, despite the fact that their offense asks them to do something completely different. So Will Greer was good. Do we want to talk about Will Greer and maybe Malik Zaire to wrap up the show, or no?
I don't know who that is.
Oh, the Malik Zaire. It wasn't all that it was chalked up to be, but Wilton Spate wasn't much better. My gosh. Michigan has issues too, I think, offensively.
Florida's so bad.
Yeah,
I'm so tired of Florida's coaches. I'm so tired of it.
I don't blame you. It's 14 points were scored by the defense.
You have 8 months to prepare for that game. 8 friggin' months.
Yeah, bad.
And you scored 3 points on offense.
Yep.
And you look that incompetent. I'm done. I'm done with the coaches. Done with it.
Trevor's calling for heads. We talked about a ton of different quarterbacks from the opening weekend of college football. Some really, really fun stuff. We did talk about Mason Rudolph a little bit on Friday, so we'll let him slide for now. But we've got more and more to talk about as the week goes on. Our format is kind of going to be, once NFL kicks off, we're going to talk about how the rookies did on Mondays, and then Tuesday and Wednesday we'll cover college football heavily. We'll look back at the past weekend. We'll look ahead to the upcoming games. And who we think, where we kind of see the class as a whole right now, who's doing well, stock up, stock down type of stuff, evaluating some of that on Wednesdays. And Thursday, we'll come back to the NFL, a preview, and look ahead to what we think rookies will do. Friday, we'll take your questions. Fan Fridays, we'll save it as a day for anything else that needs covered, some breaking news, anything crazy going on, things of that nature. And so that's how we plan to roll through the season. We'll improvise. We'll always keep you on your toes. That's one thing we always promise. But as always, thank you guys so much for listening and supporting, and keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft. Napa
Know How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know How. Napa Know How. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.